All right, the fat lady has sung. We remember its field. It's a different world already. All right, today is Sunday. Next week there's no shirim, obviously. And the week afterwards we do have shir, then we pick up again after Sukkot. Today is Sunday, September 18th, 2022. And again, there's a death in my greater family, I have to call it. Rabbi Sender Shiskal was a classmate of mine, an Edela, an Elecha. He got smicha maybe a year after me, and he worked for the Mizrahi. He headed up the Mizrahi in Canada. And I remember he lived in Montreal. It was unique for us to have someone who lived in Montreal. And he came in Aliyah afterwards. He spent many years already in Israel. I recall him fondly. He was a Talmud Chacham and a Yerei Shemayim, and a smile, I can just see the smile on Sender's face. Yehei Zichro Baruch. I also want to mention, I mentioned this last week in relation, I don't even know in relation to what. We spoke about the mitzvah mila, and I quoted the Sefer Chinuch, and I just want to stress that the Sefer Chinuch, what I was referring to, I'm talking mitzvah bet, mitzvah mila, and he talks about that, why did God let man complete the job? If being gemalt is so important, we should have been born nimal. So this is what I referred to. And I would say this is basic to the Rav's thinking, to Ish Halacha, and as humans and Jews, God left the world totally unfinished. It was not perfect. A little bit of the tohu uvohu remains, and that's the challenge to the human being. You do a brit mila, well, if you can do a brit mila, you can master shas and paiskim, shelet and shuvet, questions that come up. Scientifically, this was the Rav in Ish Halacha, Milua Taretz V'Kivshuha. And this is what I sent out, the challenge. We have to keep on finding solutions. In my lifetime, and one Talmud sitting here is a witness to it, we conquered hard. People, when I was growing up, so many people died in their 40s and 50s. And today, look at the advance in medical science. Halavai, we should conquer cancer. And specifically, I say about breast cancer, which is basically a European Ashkenazic disease that has the highest percentage, I'm told. And I've lost many students and many acquaintances, young people. And halavai, we should have the ability to conquer it. And that would be a kiyum of what the Sefer Chinuch is saying. Now, I also mentioned last week, the reason I'm quoting the Sefer Chinuch again is that one Talmud, you look into it, I won't go into it now, there's a beginning to the Sefer Chinuch where he speaks about having like an emblem on the body that you're Jewish. But this is the second half. That's what I made my dresser on, not the first half. The first half gets us involved. David, do you go with David or do you go with David? Which is David, okay? Okay, no. It's a Ramban. It has to remain David. The Rav called me Alu. He never learned any other name of mine. And there's a reason why. And if last week we spoke about mikveh, and I made the point that in the state of Israel, more women go to mikveh than a Shomrat Shabbat. And this is particularly true in the Sephardic world. So listening to my Sheyurim is a wonderful individual. He's a great authority in the calendar and that part of Judaism, Kiddush HaChodesh, he's publishing again. It's Dr. Bill Gvirtz, if you recognize the name. He's related to Michael Hecht, Rabbi Hecht, who I grew up with. His brother-in-law is Julius Berman, the uncle of the president. And he tells the following story. About 23 years ago, my wife and I took a trip to Paris, where we purchased two works of art by Alain Kleinman and his illustrated Haggadah. The owner of the gallery in the old Jewish neighborhood was a Sephardi Jew. Although he worked on Shabbat in his gallery, his wife went to mikveh and he put on tefillin daily. So, another proof, Natan, that I didn't hit a home run, at least I hit a double, which, you know, in the same class of Hank Bauer, your namesake. Then he tells the following story, which is just magnificent. About 15 years ago, I was sitting next to someone I did not recognize on a business trip to Israel. People were coming up before takeoff and were kissing his hand. Kissing his hand, I have to tell you, the Sfadim have such an innate love of Torah. When I would finish a shayur in the army, they would run forward, kiss my, who am I, what am I? I can't exactly picture kissing the Rav's hand, if you understand what I'm saying. But that's the way the Sfadim react. And after we took off, I jokingly told them I was jealous no one kissed my hand. It turns out he was the son of Rav Avadya Yosef and was returning for a Gerut conference in Buenos Aires, representing his father. It's probably the chief rabbi of today. Interesting conversation about Gerut. He saw me writing and I showed him a footnote quoting his father, who mustered six sources for his position. He said that his father could only find six sources, it must be a dat yachid. You follow, this is Rav Avadya. David, I knew Rav Avadya. I interacted, we were muttering a guna based upon yours truly's thinking that came out of this classroom. And he passed him la'alachas. The source, unbelievable. I taught his daughter, too. He would send me gifts, reprints, because when his daughter went to Micholah, he was worried. He had a very narrow upbringing, and he was overwhelmed with the Yirat Shemayim and Michlalah, Baruch Hashem. But this is the point. We both davened in our seats and then had breakfast. Across from us sat what appeared to be an old Sephardi Jew. He had breakfast and after breakfast put on a large blue yarmulke, put on tefillin, and proceeded to daven longer than the two of us put together. Rav Yosef commented, that was the type of Jew his father knew intimately, while we now have difficulty fully understanding. And let me tell you, the truer words were never spoken. That's the generation of the Sfadim, one or two generations ago. Even where they were no longer medakdek and kol ha-mitzvot, but what they did with tremendous kafana. And could you imagine, here's Rav Yosef, here's Dr. Gvirtz, and this Sephardi Jew who ate breakfast before without a kippah, puts on a kippah, tefillin, and davens with tremendous kafana. By the way, Natan, are you familiar with Ruption Reconstruction? Rav Chaim's, Dr. Grach's masterpiece. My class, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Salterev's son, my classmate. If you're not familiar with Ruption Reconstruction, take out a week and master it. It's a treat. He makes exactly the same point, that in Boston, the old-timers, Europäische, these were people in America became Mechalalei Shabbos, worked on Shabbos, except Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, their davening was with 10 times more kavanah than the average American yeshiva bachur. You follow? It's the same concept. Of course, what lives on, if you don't have the totality, it's what do the children have? And this is the greatness of Shas, the greatness of Rav Ovadia, Lahavzir Atar Liyoshna. They recreated the Svadik Torah world. Okay, but it's a very nice letter that proves our point. Finally, I just want to mention Dr. Gavietz says something which is worth thinking about. We spoke in great detail about Rabbi Soloveitchik and the whole problem of the traditional shul and the shul without a mechitza, and Rabbi Regensburg permitted the rabbis to take these shtelas, and Rabbaran was very much opposed. And time has shown that Rav Regensburg had a good point, because what ultimately happened, I don't know if research has been done, but I'm willing to bet if you research the traditional synagogues that existed in the Midwest in the 50s, the 60s, into the 70s, those that still exist, that the neighborhoods still aren't Jewish, I would venture a guess that 90% of the synagogues became Orthodox. You see, this is the result of the day school. It's the result of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik stand, Baruch Litwin, what went on in the 50s. We spoke about this in great detail past years. People today know, you want to be from, you have to accept the miskeret. Halacha commands obedience. And a shul has to have a mechitza. And the greatest proof, Elliot, have you ever been to Chicago? What's the biggest shul in Chicago? Kins. It represents a number, Knesset Israel, Musaf Sfad, merges and merges. That shul today not only has a mechitza, who's the rabbi? Rakefet's student, Rabbi Dr. Lenny Mitanke, who was one of the past president of the Rabbinical Council of America, one of two remaining candidates for the presidency of Yeshiva University. We got to give him credit. He backed out at the last minute, and he was a very viable candidate because he has a lot of experience and he's extremely capable. But I imagine, and his wife is also my student, they're both from Chicago, she's a rabbi's daughter, I imagine they finally reached the decision. We know the Atmos Nefesh we have in Chicago. We don't want to get involved in the Big Apple where there's big Atmos Nefesh. So, but Lenny Mitanke is rabbi of the shul, and you again, it was no mechitza. Today, one of the leading Orthodox congregations in the United States. Okay. Now I want to come back to last week, and I want to come back to the Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Twesky Memorial. It's his 25th Yard site, and last Sunday, the entire day was devoted to Rabbi Twesky at the Bernard Revel Graduate School, and it's all available. It was on Zoom, now it's available on YU Torah. Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Twesky was very unique. It's an individual I knew quite well. It's the Rav's son-in-law, but you have to understand, he was the Tolna Rebbe's son. And on one hand, he was totally Tolna Rebbe. The Hasidus within him, the Nigin, the palatable Yirat Shamayim. He was the Tolna Rebbe, succeeded his father. On the other hand, the same individual was a world-famous professor at Harvard University, head of the Judaic Studies. His doctorate on the Rabbad was the first major doctorate done to America on a level of scholarship that equaled anything we had in Germany or Eastern Europe from an academic point of view. And here I want to tell you an interesting story, B'didi Havi Yovder. I've told it over the decades, but maybe you never heard it. But it drives the point home. When I was a junior in college, they announced a $50 prize. It was a bond, a $50 bond. That's a lot of money. Junior in college, 57, 58. It's probably 57. And what was the prize for? For the best research paper in Jewish history. Someone gave money to YU to encourage students to study Jewish history. I did my research, and you should know later, it was the first article I ever published. It appears in Jewish Life, and later it appears in Rakafat Aram, Chelek Aleph, which is being republished now. And what did I do my article on? The Central Relief Committee in 1924 brought three rabbanim to America to raise, they set a goal of $1 million for the yeshiva in Eastern Europe and Palestine. They raised about $400,000. Who did they bring to America? Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, Chief Rabbi, Rav Avram Dovish Kahana Shapiro, Chief Rabbi of Kovna, he's the one who gave the Rav Smicha, the Va'Avraham, and they brought Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. So I did my research on this visit, who they were, what they did, where they spoke. I revealed certain details. I had a direct into the visit because my Rebbe of Musa, who I have a private smicha from, the only one he gave all his years in America, only one person ever got smicha from him, the voice you hear, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessin. He came to America as the assistant to the Levush Mordechai, to Rav Mordechai, to the Slabodka Rosh Yeshiva. And I say later in life, when he was saved from Hitler and wound up in America and wound up in YU, there was no bitterness in him. You remember my point. I hope you've read what I've published. But Hitler killed 6 million, ruined the lives of another 5 million. So when you studied with the Yeruchim Gerelek, Rav Noach Bunstein, Rav Shmuel Leizer Volk, you could feel a certain bitterness. Where they wound up in life, had the world remained normal, they would have been Gedolei Yisrael in the world they knew. And here they are in YU, where the students look at them one way with respect, and the other way, you didn't even graduate high school. Who are you? So, Rav Lessin never had that bitterness. And I think it was because he visited and toured America, that rabbinical delegation was all over America and Canada. USA, Toronto, Montreal, they saw what was going on. And he knew what America was about. He wasn't in for shock therapy when he arrived. So I hand in my paper, and the committee sits, and everyone says Rothkopf's paper is the best. Dr. Agus, Professor Agus, later I do my master, one of my masters I do under him, Abraham Agus, Abraham Agus, Professor Agus gets up, I'm told, and says, what do you mean he's the best paper? This isn't the paper. We said in Jewish history, American Jewish history does not exist. It's nothing. We've achieved nothing in America, just intermarriage and assimilation. Jewish history means Eastern Europe, Germany, Hungary, Britain perhaps, America. And he was against giving me, he was outvoted. I got the $50 bond, Baruch Hashem, and you know, I was a happy kid, recognition. But America? What are you talking about? This is nothing. So, you got to remember, before Professor Tversky, no one dreamt that an American kid could do scholarship, academia, which is a different world than just Shas and Paiskim. And his work on the Rabbad, wow, I remember there were articles in the American Jewish Yearbook that this augurs well for the future of Torah scholarship from an academic point of view in the United States. And this was Yitzhak Trotsky. And whenever you refer to him, you have to refer to Talmud Rebbe / Harvard professor. Now, he went on to publish a great deal on the Ramban and afterwards Maimonides. Something he called our attention to, which I have to admit, all the years I sat in the Rebbe's class, I didn't realize this. It's only later that Professor Trotsky in his writings, I suddenly saw, wow, what am I referring to? We always think of the Rambam as a Sefer Halakha. You want philosophy? Go to his Mora Nebuchim. Go to his Igrot. You'll find philosophy. You get a Taiman, you get a Shmad, etc., etc. But we never thought in terms of the Mishnah Torah as philosophy. 99% is correct. But at the end, generally, at the end of every series of halacha in the Mishnah Torah, he ends off the last halacha, the last siman, unbelievable philosophy. And here you have it. And this is what the Sachmarav quotes. I'm quoting Hilchat Mikvaot, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Yud Bet. And the Rambam, this is basic understanding of Yiddishkeit. After all the halacha and everything he paskins, Daba Baruch V'Galui Shahatumot V'Atarot Gezerot HaKatuv Heim. And when it comes to these concepts of Tumah and Tara, these are chukim. We're not going to understand it logically. Otsoa shekavor b'mayim ele gizeret ha-kotofi v'hadava talui b'kavonat ha-lev. And this is beautiful. See, you think of cleanliness. What does cleanliness mean? Mud, dirt, filth. You wash off your hands. Tumah v'tara has nothing to do with mud or filth or dirt. Lefikach amru chachamim, tova v'lo chukzak, ki'ilu lo tovar. That having a proper kavana is crucial to tefillah. And the Rambam goes on, ki remez yesh b'davar, ki shem shahamachavim libo letacher, Kivan shetaval tahar ba'af al pi shalonit kadesh begufo davar kein ha'makavim libolet acher nafsho mitumat ha'nefesh shehei machshavot ha'avan v'deyat ha'ra'at kiven shehizkin belilo v'frosh me'atan ha'itzat v'hevi nafsho b'mei hadat tahar. And that's a beautiful concept. It's like you go into water. You go into a mikveh. You come out, there's no change. It's the same body that you went in before. But if you have kavana, tahara, you come out a different person. And the same thing, and this is so important for balei tshuva. You're the same individual, but you think differently. And I don't have to tell you, the world today with YU, I trust you all know the news today, YU threw a curveball, we'll see what happens. They abolished the Supreme Court, I'm about to say, Mishpat Elyon, the Supreme Court in America, by a vote of 5-4, voted in favor of the Rav. You follow me, Elliot? Remember the Machlekes, the Reverend Dr. Belkin? and they voted in favor of the Rav, that why you, if you separate the yeshiva, is not a religious institution, and they must allow the gay club. So evidently, Motzoi Shabbat, YU announced, I heard that YU was going to do something big, I have no idea what it was. They abolished all clubs. So now the baseball game is ended for everyone. It's not just the Yankees, all 16 teams, if and my kind was 16, I don't know how many there are today, I can't count so high. But my kind were 8, Nate, all clubs are abolished. All clubs in YU. We'll see what happens. But you go to mikveh, you become a bal tshuva, your thinking changes. You makabel ol malchut shamayim. You no longer worship yourself. Very powerful words. And this is very matim for this period of the year. And this way he ends off, harehu amer v'sarakti aleichem mayim tahorim utahartem. Mikol tumoteichem u'mikol gululeichem va'ata'eretchem. The pasuk in Yecheskel, Hashem barachamav harabim mikol chet avon va'ashma yetaharenu. Amen. And this is the way the Rambam ends off Hilchot Mikvot. No, this is why a mikvah is so important. This is why it doesn't matter if it's a conservative temple, a traditional temple, they want to build a mikveh, build a proper mikveh. La'arbot tahara b'Yisrael. And this is the psak of the Rambam. Now, I want to tell you, and I don't know all the details, there's a wonderful Jew who lives in Denver, Colorado. No, Beryl. What's his name? Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg. Absolutely. So Hillel Goldberg, check it out. I think there's a Reformed temple there which built the mikveh. He was involved. He was the one who set the pace. And I have to say, if I'm correct, you have a Reformed temple building a mikveh. Be very interesting to know who uses it and what the impact on that reform temple has been. You follow? It has to be checked. His son was a Talmud of mine in the Kollel a number of years ago. Maybe if he's listening, maybe he can fill us in on the details. Now, I want to thank my student, this is a Chabad historian, who I think Rakefe gets a little bit credit in encouraging him to become a historian, Nachum Shmayahu Zayitz, I think he pronounces it, I read it Zajac, Z-A-J-A-C. So he sent me information, this question of the traditional temple building a mikveh became a cause celebre. It was not only asked of the Satmarov, Rabbi, the expert on mikvot, asked the same question of the Minchat Yitzchak, of the famous Minchat Yitzchak at that time, Av Beitin in Manchester, in England, and ultimately, he asked the same question of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I just want to quote to you, the Minchat Yitzchak totally agreed with the Satmarov, 100%. There's another sefer of someone from South America, Chassidish Yid. He claims that the question came not from an American temple, but from a South American temple that did not have a mechitza, but there were people in the Kehillah who wanted a mikveh. If that's true, it's a little difficult to understand because the way the Satmarav writes, he's describing America. But it could be the Shiloh was from South America, but he was describing the situation in America with the traditional synagogues. But I want to quote from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, how he ends off his tshuva. He deals with it, he refers to it. It's in Likutei Sichat. The problem is when I say it's in Likutei Sichat, I don't know which one. It's Likutei Sichat, Pashit Pekudei. I find it in what was sent to me beginning on page 175 and in page 180, and I think this is a good summary of this entire question. V'yim kein al achat kama v'kama shekein sarach loma hanhagat hadam shelo minnoa et atzmo melahashpi al chavero b'inyanei Torah u'mitzvot b'li mabat al matzav b'ruchaniyot she'enu k'dabai. And what the Lubavitcher Rebbe is touching upon here is something I've always alluded to, and it's always troubled me. What do you mean you stand on the street corner? Are you Jewish? Did you put on tefillin? Here's a guy who eats chaser treif. Here's a guy who's mechalel Shabbat with every melacha you can imagine. Here's a guy who boel bilat asurat, even if he's loyal to his wife, she's a neder, a chi of kares, etc. And you tell him, put on tefillin. My litvisha mind, what am I bothering him? What have I accomplished? He's putting on tefillin. Takes off the tefillin. He goes back to being the same Eisbach, the same Trumpenik. Oh no. Maybe this approach that I've just mentioned is totally wrong. You take a Jew who's a Tinok Shenishba, knows nothing about Yiddishkeit, totally lost, never educated, and you put on tefillin. First of all, you've done a mitzvah, you're right then. He's put on tefillin. He said Kriyat Shema. He's no longer a kafta de lo monach tefillin. That's number one. Number two, and this, I quote the Rav in my work on the Rav, and afterwards in my article on the Rav and the Rebbe, which is my article, that article has now been republished 4 different times. So of all my articles, I think that has gotten the most publicity or the most publication. And the Rav says, when you put tefillin on a Jew like Lubavitch, because they're asking the Rav this, the person asking him comes from Litvisha background. I know who's asking him the question. It was in the Mariv paper, 1977, big interview with the Rav, before Rosh Hashanah or before Yom Kippur. I have the exact date in my work on both the article and in my work on the Rav. And they asked him, how do you feel about that? Well, what are you making, a joke out of tefillin? An oisfaf, a trumpenik. Could you picture what Rav Yeruchim Gerelik would do to this guy? We'd eat him up alive. And you're putting tefillin on him. And Rav says, no, no, no. It's much more than putting on tefillin. When a Jew puts on tefillin, he has to ask, who am I? What am I? Where do I come from? What are these boxes? And who knows what the impact can lead to? That's the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Very powerful. In this day and age, don't look at him because he's a Mechalel Shabbos and an Oichlan of Eret and Trefer and everything else. No, no. Don't look at him. Even if it's Ruch Niyot Einu Kedabai, the other Rabbah, Al Zeh Yif'ol Shippur V'Aliyah Ruchanot, him and his friends. And this is why the Lubavitcher Rebbe says that if we can build a mikveh, absolutely build the mikveh. Yes, yes.
I worked with somebody from Chabad to Ashkaka. And the guy in charge at the company was a secular Jew all the way.
Right.
And he looked forward to the guy coming to the LK Labs every year because he made him put on film.
Made him put on film. So I have to tell you, I understand exactly what you're saying, 100%. My family's in America 122 years now. My wife's in America longer, 150 years plus. And there's very little left of the rest of the family outside of my branch. Very little left, if at all. So I had an uncle, Uncle Max, and he had a little bit feeling, I think, in the state of Israel, and also engendered feeling. He was mad at his son intermarried, and it bothered him. Other people, their children intermarried, doesn't even bother them. Nebuch, that my cousin is my first cousin, he was killed in a car crash, and at the funeral, I was living in Israel already, but we got a printout of the funeral. It was in the local newspapers. He lived someplace in New England. And the priest mentioned that he was of Jewish descent. So this uncle came to Israel. And he was so excited at the kotel they put tefillin on him, the chabadnik there. And by the way, that Chabadnik, for all I know, is the Chabadnik whose widow was marrying Jonathan Polad. You're aware of what's happening. Jonathan Polad got engaged. They'll get married after the Shalosh Regalim in accordance with it's the Minhag Yisrael. It's brought down the Halacha. But if you desperately need a woman or a man to take care of you, you can get married after the Shleishim. There are even others that are matter even more, I mean, if you need it, if it's desperate. But Minhag Yisrael is to wait 3 regalim out of respect for the departed. So it turns out that this lady, Donin, her first husband, ran the Chabad Tefillin stand at the Kotel. He died 7 years ago, 7 children left, the eldest 18 at the time. He's 25 today. So Jonathan Polad picks up a beautiful woman spiritually. She's of Manchester, by the way. And picks up a family that he never had. So I'm in a Shemayim Zachinu. But my uncle was so happy. And I remember he said to me, Ani, I haven't put on tefillin since my bat mitzvah. Tears in his eyes that he put on tefillin at the kotel. It should be a schut for his memory. But you see, this was Chabad. And you can't argue with them. In this day and age, people like Rakefet, you have to smack their faces. Chutzpah, mad at a guy, you know, they put on tefillin, suddenly lulav and etrog. Look at his background, look what he comes from. Be happy he's doing this mitzvah. And I'll end off with 2 stories of my students. One time I'm walking in New York with two of they're very famous people today, Dr. Phil Kaslow and Rabbi Dr. Danny Rothenberg. Does anyone know them? One is at Columbia Presbyterian, one is a well-known psychologist, etc. Danny is semi-reading my students today. What can I tell you? Some of them are already my age, we'll put it that way. So we're walking in New York. And it has to be near, if I recall correctly, near the big public library in Manhattan, 42nd Street, that area. And Chabadnik stops us and asks, stops me, I'm walking ahead, like, in the middle, are you Jewish? Did you put on tefillin? And my students told him off. I said, what are you getting upset about him? What do I look like? What do you want out of him? Even worse, at the kotel, one time, Friday night, I remember I organized, I'm the one who organized the first early Ashkenazic minyan in Israel when they introduced daylight savings time in 74, I think it was. Until then, we never had the problem we have with this darn daylight savings time. So I organized an early minyan. I'm coming to the kotel quite early. Again, Talmidim are with me. And the Chabadnik, are you Jewish? And I walked away. I told them, they told the guy off. I told him, what do you want out of him? He's a Chabadnik. The chances are he's a Baal Tshuva. You're going to try to tell him that your Rebbe, who you think knows something, no beard, no payers, look at the way he's dressed. Our Sheikh is a nice Vafa Trump and a Kapushtak, a good a good for nothing Nick. You follow? But this is Chabad. But I'll tell you, at JFK, one time I'm going to catch a plane, and a Chabadnik stops me again with the tefillin. So I say, then I became a Litvak. I said to him, listen, I haven't missed a day of putting on tefillin in my life. Now look at me. How old am I? I'm a total orphan. I don't have a father. I don't have a mother. How can it be I never missed a day putting on tefillin? And this poor guy was an amoritz to the third power. And so finally I had pity on him. I told him, my father died Chol HaMoed. In Israel, no one puts on tefillin in Chol HaMoed. My mother died at 7 a.m. I daven 5:30 minyan. My brother daven 6 o'clock minyan in Israel. We both put on tefillin. When we called America, we told our kid brother, tomorrow morning when you wake up, you can't put on tefillin. You follow? It's Yom HaKvura, Yom HaMita, etc., etc. So this poor Chabadnik, I don't think he knew what I was talking about, but boy, he was happy to see me walk on. We'll put it that way. Norm, you got to have a bit of a sense of humor, but you have to have understanding. I'm a Litvak. I knew Reb Chaim Griska. If I didn't see him, but I still knew him so well. I knew Reb Aaron Kotler. Tangibly. I knew Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. These are all people I spoke with in learning. People I suck. You can't. Gedolei Yisrael. I'm a Litvak. But nowadays, if you don't understand Chabad, you better go back to yeshiva and learn it all over again. They're absolutely right. You take a Jew and you give him a moment of sanctity. And who knows what will come out of one moment of sanctity. I don't have to speak more. It's Elul. Still it will be, it's a bite-sign Rosh Hashanah. How can you talk about Chodesh Elul without speaking Yiddish? David, when I learned in Lakewood, you know, I was convinced the Torah was given in Yiddish. No one has proven me wrong until today. Although I have to admit, my great-grandchildren, who are a little older, said Slichus last night, and their Hebrew is better than mine. They're geniuses. Little kids, Hebrew, 10 times better than their great-grandfather. All right, let me go further. Natan, with your permission, I will shift gears and move into a new area. And here, I want to apologize and quote Reb Aaron Lichtenstein and give you an interesting source. Sex is here to stay. If we didn't have, I advise you to pick up my lectures on sex and marriage that I spent a whole year in the Kollel many years ago. If we wouldn't have sex, we wouldn't be sitting here. Plain and simple. Why get married? Why get married? Natan, you gotta be crazy. Today you're your own boss. You wake up when you want. You go to sleep when you want. You spend your money the way you want. Who the heck has to get married? Have a boss and children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Can I inherit? If I make a cheshbon, my parents, if one in Livracha, have probably onto 100 great-great-grandchildren between myself and my brothers. All right. So thank God it's an open Gemara in Yoma, the same Gemara in Sanhedrin. Thank God the Ribbono Shel Olam created a sexual drive. And we get married. And we have children. Okay. Now, when it comes to sex, you see, there's something about modesty. Modesty is part and parcel of the Torah. Certain things you talk about, certain things you allude to, you don't talk in detail. In our generation, where people walk around naked, I mean, it's beyond comprehension. I've met from Jews, and they say to me, you know, growing up here, And they say, if women would walk around like this 70 years ago, they'd lock them up and put them away. And it's a crazy. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in the 70s, there was a famous Fabrenian, early 70s. So at that time, the miniskirt was coming into the vogue. So the Rebbe, who had a sense of humor like all Gedolei Yisrael, it's in a Fabrenian, I have it recorded. So the Rebbe says, Leben as at sight as the Freyen Zagin, kol nisht kol hamaber harezem shubach, el kol hamakatze harezem shubach. We're living at a time when women say, so we're living at a time where nothing, there's no modesty left. There's a Rabbi Friedman, a famous speaker for Chabad. He wrote a book which I don't remember the exact title, but essentially it was, there's no modesty left in life. And this is true. So then the challenge is, do we speak about it or don't we speak about it? So I want to refer you to a brilliant article, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. It's very hard to describe Rabbi Aaron for the new generation, but I don't believe there was any Talmud of the Rav who came so close to personifying everything the Rav believed in. And I always get upset when people say, oh, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, the son-in-law of the Rav, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, the gonadir, the tzaddik yesod olam, who happened to be the son-in-law of the Rav. You understand that Tova in her own right is a great individual. She's my classmate too, that you don't know. That she sat in the shir, it was room 102, big room then, it wasn't divided like it is now. And there were three doors to the room, or two doors to the room, the front and in the middle. She sat next to the middle door. So I once asked the Tova, why do you sit next to the middle door? She said, when my father loses his temper, I want to escape quickly. And that, you know, the Rav, that did in my time. I was in the golden period. You had to shape up, David, or you shipped out, you understand? You didn't play games with the Rav. But later in life, the Rav, unfortunately, the Rav mellowed, had so much tragedy. You know what I'm saying? Triple Avelut and hell for them. God does not let you totally enjoy life. That's part of being a human being. There's certain limitations. So Aaron Lichtenstein, his command of Shas and Poskim, his command of English, his command of English literature, it was second to none. So in tradition, volume 39, number 2. It's from 2005. It's a talk he gave, and he published it in tradition, on marriage, relationship and relations. It's an interesting title, relationship between man and woman, and relations, the sexual aspects. And he deals here with the problem that is part and parcel of every lecture you'll hear today on sex and marriage. When it comes to the sexual relationship, there are two mitzvot involved. One mitzvah is procreation through revu, basic mitzvah, first mitzvah. The second mitzvah is ona. And ona, ayin vav nun hei, I would say is a great amount of discussion in the contemporary world, all the way from our world to the Haredi world as well. There's the famous letter of the Stipler. If I mentioned the Lenny Mitanki, Rabbi Mitanki before, he once wrote to me, do I have a copy of Stipler? He remembered I quoted the Stipler's letter to him. So he writes to me, Mori Rebbe Harav Hagon Aaron Rakefet, it's a shlita. So I wrote back to him, everyone is a Rav Hagon today. To me, it's a Rav Hagun. When you call someone a Rav Hagon, it means he's a guru. You know, the Haredi world, every time I've seen Rav Goinim, who don't know how to, I don't tell you stories now. I've seen, they don't know Ivra, simple Hebrew. So the next time he wrote to me to thank me for the letter, he writes back, Harav Hagon Hagadol, with the word Hagadol underlined, all right? I can't argue with Lenny Batanki. Halavai, I should be a Rav Hagon Hagadol. Anyway, but this is a very delicate question. What is a man's obligation? Nothing to do with procreation. Your wife is pregnant. Your wife is practicing birth control. You have already 5, 6, 7 children. She's ready to jump off the roof if she has another child. These are practical questions, lalacha, that I've discussed with the Rav, discussed with Rabban Soloveitchik, etc. But Ona, all right, leave it at that. We'll come back to it. Now, do we talk about this in public? I have to tell you, I have great hesitancy. To me, it's simple. But on the other hand, I did speak about all the years I taught in Machon Gold and the Midrashit Maria, not in Michlala, because in Michlala I didn't want to get involved in Hashkafa. I didn't want to... Rabbi Koopman and I had slightly different Hashkafa. I didn't want to... He's the boss. I didn't want to get involved. You understand what I'm saying? But Machon Gold and Midrashit Maria, I did give lectures on Parat Mishpacha. As I mentioned to you, I would not give those lectures today, because there are now enough women who can give the lectures. But now you come, even male audiences, even YU, you'll see what I discover. I can't believe what they lecture about in public. Wow. So I have to tell you, I'm not the only one who has this dialectical tension. I mentioned this walking home from Mincha Marv the other day. There are two, honorary students who walked me home. So we have to go down steps. I said, Lo Pashut, I live in Rav Berlin. For me to go to shul, I have to climb up 72 steps. So on one hand, it's very healthy. On the other hand, it's a pain in the neck. There are no shuls on Rav Berlin. They're all in Rav Chalap and Yerushalayim Harim Savivla. And wow, there's no other way to go up to Chalap without climbing either these steps, those steps, or the other steps. There are three different major stairways. So the students were, and I mentioned my dilemma. So one Talmud, a chavir of mine, Rabbi, he's also a big Talmud Chacham and a PhD in English literature. He's from England, and a terrific individual. His last name is Goldberg. Naftali Goldberg, Rabbi Dr. Naftali Goldberg. So he says to me, Rebbe, Rabbi Lichtenstein has the same problem you have. So I said, give me a link. Got me a link. And I quote Rabbi now. I have written this piece and I present it here likewise with a measure of ambivalence and trepidation. On one hand, its subject is important as a conceptual and ideological topic per se. Moreover, beyond the theoretical, it impinges upon intimate chambers in the life of almost any and every halakhically committed Jew or Jewess. Finally, to the knowledgeable, the basic issues and primary texts are probably familiar, so that any attempt at grappling with the concerns and elucidating them may be welcome. On the other hand, others may find part of discussion disturbing, if not objectionable. To some, it might appear to stand in violation of the Mishnah's admission as elucidated by the Gemara Chagiga 11b, Yud Aleph Bet, against public discussion of the aspects of prescribed sexual liaisons. And he goes on, but yet he publishes the article. And I highly recommend it to you, but I have to caution you in advance. Rabbi Aaron's command of English You cannot read what Reb Aaron writes standing or sitting on only one leg. You got to be totally relaxed and ready to concentrate. That was Reb Aaron. David, it's not the same world. You have no idea with Reb Aaron's death. The last time we were together was in this room. We had a Shabbat. The Shabbat, I was younger, and I could attend, my wife could attend. It's a different ballpark today. But Reb Aaron was here with Tova. We spent a wonderful Shabbat, and it was a great moment for me. Reb Aaron came in to hear my shir. I spoke on responsibilities of a rabbi. I quoted Rabbi Yosef, the Aguna, we were mati, a story about it, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Rav, etc. And at the end of the shir, Reb Aaron embraced me, and it was a moment in time for me. But that's life. We're only here a limited period. And Natan, the challenge is to make the most of that limited period. So with this introduction, I move on. We won't finish it today, and you'll understand next week why I quoted Reb Aaron and why I'm a little bit, not just a little, why Norm, I'm very diffident. But maybe if Julia Hart were here, it would do her some good to hear this year. Okay, I'm quoting the Mishnah Halacha. The Mishnah Halacha, Chelik Tetvav, Yasher Koyach. Will I see you tomorrow, David?
Yes.
Be a pleasure, be a pleasure. Okay, thank you for honoring me. Chelik Tetvav, Siman Kuf Yud Chet. Jack, am I reading it properly? Kuf Yud Chet. My eyes have to see the Chet that it touches. Okay. And as far as I know, and I'm not a great expert in medical science and halacha, I leave that to... I always say that anyone who gets involved in medical science, you have to be a medical doctor and a big Talmud Chacham. I can know theory, but it's like knowing Tafis. You can study Tafis, but unless you play with the lung, who the heck are you to Paschke and Shaila? You understand what I'm saying? They tell stories that someone was learning and he knows everything, and then a woman comes in with a Shaila and the Av Beit Din calls him over, come and see the Shaila. This is a kookaburra. Oh, this is a kookaburra. The guy knew everything backwards and forward. By the way, when we learned, we didn't study Tafis already. The Rav abolished it. The Yoredeya, we didn't study Tafis already as early as 1959, 1960. But the Rav took Reb Aaron Lichtenstein to the slaughterhouse. He saw uphand what it's all about. That the Rav saw Reb Aaron was unique, took him to the slaughterhouse. Okay, so what is he doing here? He's dealing with ultrasound. I don't know if this is the first time someone has dealt with it. The tshuva is from the year 2000, and it's written to someone that he knows, Haraba Goyen, the Aleph Dvorkis. Dvorkis, by the way, is a Litvish family. I would imagine it's from that family. It's a Slabodka family. I had a classmate, Kalman Lowe, L-O-W. He lived near my grandparents. I don't know how from the family, most of the kids who went to Solanta, their families were not totally from. But I remember his mother saying to me, if you would know what a family I descend from, Dvorkis. And at the time, I heard the name, a funny name, Dvorkis. And later, when I mastered Slabodka and Tunwata Musa, the Dvorkis name came up. I understood already what she meant. Habach Vashtan, let's see what it meant. You understand? I understood already what she meant, Dvorkis. By the way, I would never advise you, Elliot, to have a name low. The teachers always went after him. How low can low get? And I wonder what became of him. He didn't go on to MTA, and I lost all contact. If by any miracle anyone is listening who knows a Kalman Lowe or who knew a Kalman Lowe who came from the Bronx, I'm curious to know how his life worked out. He'll remember me as Arnie Rothkopf. All right? Now, an ultrasound. Well, why is there halachic? First of all, let's talk about it. A woman is pregnant. Well, is it a boy? Is it a girl? Everyone has a certain preference. We'll see what Chazal had to say. Then, kid is born. If it's a boy, you go crazy. Shalom Zacha. A Brit. Could be a pigeon haben. Imagine if you know in advance, well, life will be so much easier. Right or wrong? Interesting. That there's another side to the coin. Habateach b'ashem chesed yisov avenhu. Why do you get involved in questions beyond you? What's it important? Your wife is pregnant, whatever she has. Pray that the baby be healthy. That's all that counts. Habateach b'ashem, chesed yisov avenhu. How does the Gemara put it, Chagiga or elsewhere? B'kivshei d'rachman olomali. Leave secrets to God. Or no? Didn't Rakefet say an hour ago, miluot haretz v'kivshuha? Conquer the world. Make up for the part of knowledge that we don't have yet. This is a divine charge, like a Brit Milah. Finish out God's creation. Isn't it beautiful? Know in advance. What color clothes to buy? Norm, did you forget that? Blue, pink. Chas v'chalila, a girl should wear blue or a boy should wear pink. By the way, it's very important today. You understand what I'm saying? Boy blue, girl pink. Natan, you up to date with Flatbush? What happened there? Broke on Friday? Oh, the Rebbe shouldn't have to tell you current news. That you, I just can't. What happened? You've heard of Muggin David Yeshiva? That's more frum than Flatbush. It was a fallout from Flatbush. So it'd be more frum, more shashnik, etc. So this young lady came and they interviewed her and they hired her to teach. She's a lady like you're a Chinaman. Turns out, YU graduate, total man who believes he's a lady. And now they have a tremendous problem. If they fire her, him, she can go to court. Don't fire him. These are kids you want to be Shas Haredim like. What do you have here? Didn't Stern College have this a few years ago? What did she become? A man became a woman? Or was a man became a woman? Yeah, God so lucky. Here in Herzliya, a kid declared himself a woman, declared himself a man. God. A little girl, they're pleading, don't do a cross-gender operation till you mature. God's so up in what the liberal world has led us into. It is beyond comprehension. Okay? So, not so simple. Good, bad. How do you approach it? What do you do with an ultrasound? Something new. By the way, in Israel, you got to give all the credit in the world. I know from my grandchildren who are pregnant, they do more ultrasounds here than in America. Even with an average normal birth, there are at least 3 ultrasounds, and it costs you next to nothing. If you're in the Kupah, it's a 23 shekel. You go to a special, 23 shekel. In America, you have insurance, doesn't cover it. You have a $2,000 minimum deductible, and each ultrasound, as they tell me, is $1,000. And until you hit, go beyond 2, insurance will not cover it. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot to be proud of in Israel. Okay, so now he gets this question that a pregnant woman goes to the doctor, nibodkim al yedei machshir, ultrasound belaz, by the way, Rav Menashe Klein knew English, I would say perfectly. You see that from his tshuva. He mastered English. Uboma bararim, they find out if uba hu zacha unikeva, the efsha leidar zot ba chadashim emtsayim, kagon liyacha yud dalet shvuat. He's absolutely right, you can't tell right away. The embryo has to develop a certain amount, he says here, 14 weeks. I don't know, is that true today? Not in the early even 14 weeks? I don't know. You have to tell me medically where we're at today. But after the first initial part of the pregnancy, they can tell. And he says, the Shailerism, Yesh Tzad Cheta L'Davizeh Kila Ura Hu Dava Zar Mi'od. It's again, very strange. And again, this concept of very strange is something we're, as human beings, we're always going to hit in halacha. I give you a simple example, which I don't believe anyone, maybe Norm, maybe Elliot, you can understand me. When margarine came out, do you remember the original margarine? First of all, the dairy farmers fought it bitterly. And originally they insisted that you had to mix the color to the margarine was kept separate. You had to mix it so you knew it's not butter, you're disgracing butter, this is margarine. Then was the whole shaila, how do you have butter on your table? I have to admit, I challah, my greatest joy is to have challah with it's margarine mixed with butter. When I'm home, I only eat milk fish. My children, if it's fleshy, I'm not going to drive them crazy. But when you get older, you stop eating meat. It's psychological, mental, physical, and moral, ethical. And the doctors also tell you the less red meat, the better. So I'm a big fan. But I love bread. And they have today, they import to Israel, margarine mixed with butter. It'll be very healthy. The best of butter and the best of margarine. And all the dietitians recommend it. And boy, I developed a taste for it. No? How do you know margarine, parav, it's not milchik? Remember, they required you to leave the label on the table. Then today, I've never yet seen anyone leave a label on the table. Everyone knows it's parav. Milk for coffee, the parava first, it came out from the heksha of Rabbi Breuer, Adat Yeshurin. You had to leave the container on the table, people should know it's parav. So you see something new right away is strange, I understand it. Suddenly, what's Ketman Abdelta, what are you turning over the world? Your mother had you, did she have an ultrasound? Did your grandmother have an ultrasound? Did this Rebbetzin have an ultrasound? Why do you need an ultrasound? And that's the question he's being asked. V'gam chisalan hu bebitachon la'amin shebiyat HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shanat. Now here's where we get involved in a very fascinating source. What do you mean, bitachon? God can do whatever he wants. You're going to know a boy or girl? Kaddish Baruch Hu can change it. He can do whatever he wants. Okay. Quotes this Gemara. And this is a Gemara you're familiar with. Bracha Tafnun Dalil Omid Aleph 54a. And he quotes the Gemara. Hatzoek l'sha'ava ha'rezu tfilat shav. And the prime example, you're on a plane and suddenly the news comes through that in Jerusalem, lo aleinu, there was a terrorist attack. So you start praying on the plane, halavai, the attack should not have been in my family, on my block, my acquaintances. That's a tefillat shav. It happened already. That's what the Gemara says. Hayaba b'derech v'shema kol tzvacha b'ir v'omer yehi ratzon shelo techei b'toch beiti. Harei said tefillat shav. And I want to tell you, that once happened to me. I drove out of Machon Lev, I'm going home, and I turned the radio on. Lo aleinu, 20 years ago, they blew up a bus in Rehavia. If I would have started, halavai shouldn't be in my neighbor. It was around the corner from my house, the 19 bus. I knew 4 people on the bus who were killed. Knew 4 people. One was a secretary, worked in the coin office. I used to buy coins. And one changed our whole family's life, was a Russian woman who had come. I mean, I just want to tell you this, you should understand what the price we've paid to build this country. Was a Russian woman coming Aliyah, and her husband became totally Haredi, Hasidic. She couldn't handle it. They got divorced. He married her, moved to Shiloh, one of the Yishuvim, has a whole big new family. She was left with a boy and a girl. Children now have no father. His second wife doesn't want anything to do with them. She has enough with her husband and children. And there's no mother. She was killed. So the government steps in and they awarded them to this mother's sister who lived in Katamon, also a Russian Ola. And the legal administrator of everything is my daughter. There was a boy and a girl. They became part of our family. That boy went on to become such a Kiddush Hashem. He married a girl whose father was from Germany, didn't know a thing about Yiddishkeit, very big in the foreign ministry, single, thank God, he still had a yetzer tov for marriage. He met a Sfadik, beautiful woman, 10, 15 years younger, related to the Abu Chatzira, married her. The girl went to Bnei Akiva. The boy orphaned and the girl met in Bnei Akiva. That's the marriage I told you about, where my wife says to me, put on a white shirt, you're gonna, I think I had the ketuvah reading on the first 2 brachot, put on a white shirt, look like a mensch. We come to the wedding, and we knew who's gonna be Masada Kedushin, Rav Adin Steinsaltz, and there he is at the Chatan's Tish, a blue shirt, Rav Adin Steinsaltz, that was his trademark. He had the blue shirt, and I had the white shirt. But that wedding was worth everything to me because my grandchildren look up to him, to meet him, like I would look at the Rav, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Moshe Feinstein. They were looking at Rav Aaron Steinsaltz. Anyway, that's a marriage that worked out beautifully. They have many children today, very integrated. Tzadikei Yesod Olam. So we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam. As upset as we are with the tragedies, we have to be thankful for the success. All right, tell me, what about if your wife is pregnant? And the Gemara says, Omei yehi ratzon shetreleid ishti zacha, harei zu tfilat shav. And what about if you say, I want Halavai, my wife is pregnant, I should have a boy. Tfilat shav. She has what she has. No, the Gemara a little bit further. Daf Samech Amid Aleph. What I read for you, that's the Mishnah, that's the start of the Perek. It's actually the Mishnah in Dalet Amid Aleph. Now is the Gemara commenting on it. And wait a minute. You say it's a tefillat shav? The Gemara asks, V'lo machane rachame? Davening doesn't help? Wait a minute. And the Gemara quotes the Midrash. V'achar yolda bat v'tikrat shmadina. Afterwards, Leah had a lady, a daughter, and she called her Dina. What does it mean, V'achar? Amarav, Leachar shedana Leah din b'yatzma. It's the famous Midrash. That Leah knew Yaakov Avinu would have 12 children. She already had 6. Right or wrong? And Yud Beit Shvatim Atid Letzeif Miyakov, she shed so many. Abba Min HaShvachot, B'Shvachot together had 4. Harei Asara, Im Zeh Zacha, if I'm pregnant with a male, Lo Tehei Acholti Rachel Ka'achat HaShvachot. If I'm pregnant with a Zacha, I then have 7. 7 and 4, 11. It means that the most Rachel can have only 1 Zacha. 1 of the Shvatim. Miyad Nefchalabat Vatoma Vatikrat Shmadina. Dina, she did a din v'yatzmo, a cheshbon. Wait a minute. So why do you say you can't daven? Why do you say it's tefillat shav? Here we have an open midrash, and Dina, the wonderful female Dina, was born as a result of prayer. The zachar turned into an akeva. Ah, so the Gemara gives 2 answers. Ein maskir maselise. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. Follow? The miracles are rare and far between. It's like someone in the Haredi world, you'll argue with him, why don't you teach Liba? Kids have to know basic knowledge. So I'll tell you, quote, for the sake of argument, some great rabbi, the Ragged Shava, knew everything. New mathematics, new science. All right, this is my Sunnism. Average individual is not the Ragged Shava. Average individual is not Shmuel. Remember Shmuel? The Shmuel said, I know the speech of the, I know the astrology like I know the speech of nothing. All right, these are exceptions. If you can't quote a Maisa Nishim, all right, there are Tzadikim, Yesod Olam, there are unbelievable stories of miracles, but you can't live that way. Ein Somchin Al Hanes. You don't jump in front of a bus and say, God will save me. All right? Ah, but then there's another answer. The Iba Edema Ma'aseh Deleya Mitoch Aba'im Yom Havei. What happened with Leah was during the first 40 days of the pregnancy. Kedetanya Shloshaya Mimishonu Yavakesh Adaraknum Shelo Yasriach. First few days you have to ask God that the sperm and the egg stay together, catch on, don't become impotent, don't lose the power to fertilize. From 3 to 40 days, ask the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's when you can pray, the child should be a zachar, that's when the sex is formed. Notice that you already see in this Gemara that Chazal had a preference for men. Is that legitimate? I'll come back to it in a second. Ma'abam yom v'yad shlosh chadashim yivakesh rachim shelo yahar sandal. And it goes on and on. And you should ask rachamim that it shouldn't be a sandal. A sandal means that there shouldn't be another fertilization. Sometimes if 2 embryos are fertilized, and this can happen by the way, one day one and one a few days later, it's not perfect twins, it's 2 different embryos. the second embryo can weigh on the first embryo, press down, and can upset the formation of the child. The features will not be proper. And it goes on and on, what you have to ask God for rachamim. And the first few days you can change the sex. Umi michani rachamim. What do you mean rachamim? For homam, the Gemara asked for homam, Rabbi Yitzchak, bereid of avami, ish masri et chila, yoledet nekeva. Isha masri et chila, yoledet zacha. Shenema, isha kitasri yoda zacha. Hachi b'mayaskinen, shesri yushneim b'vatacharat. Let me explain the Gemara, and I apologize, I would prefer not talking about this Barabbim, but this Gemara has unbelievable implications, as we'll see next week, with the whole issue of Ona. But let me just summarize the Gemara. First of all, there definitely was a preference for males, for one simple reason. Society was very primitive. A male can conquer the world. He has strength, he can chop down trees, he can harvest, he can sow, he can plant, he can do many physical actions that women can't do. Secondly, and this is an open Yerushalmi, a woman you always worry about. Why do you always worry about a woman? Well, first of all, you want her to develop properly, to be attractive. You don't want anyone to take advantage of her. I need not tell you what goes on in the state of Israel. We spoke about it in the Monday class. You have an army, men and women. You have North Tel Aviv, men and women. You have society, men and women. What a difference between the Torah world and the non-Torah world. The non-Torah world has abolished sex. It no longer exists. It's a purely biological act, like eating, drinking, doing other things. Maybe it's more enjoyable, I hope, than eating and drinking. But very different than the Torah world. We grew up, we were virgins, sex, marriage. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Bet, why a woman doesn't have a brit milah, the ein isha koratet brit ele labala she'osaha kli, an open Gemara. He completes the work of God on a woman, and that is a bond between them that can never be duplicated. You can have a second marriage, you can be very happy, successful. Second marriage is lefima sub, the Gemara in Saita, daf bet amir aleph. But the first marriage has a certain magic to it that cannot be duplicated. So when you have a woman, you always have these fears. So that is why Chazal people normally had a preference for women. Do I have to go any further, Natan? Were you brought up in China? Tell me the history of China. Tell me what went on to women. Tell me how many kids were killed, women left to die. Today in China, there's a shortage of women because they were so stupid and godless, which they are until today. On a personal level, I have to tell you, there is nothing like a woman in the world. Happy is the man that has daughters. That's halacha l'maisa. I remember when I had my eldest daughter, Sir David Lifshitz wrote me a beautiful letter, and he gave me a bracha, quoting the Gemara, Bat chila simen yafel lebanim. Today, when someone has a bat chila, I don't give that bracha. I say, continue, continue, continue. There's no greater joy in the world. That's the fact. Women are women. And wow. Sensitivity, dignity, tzniut, wonderful, responsibility, devotion, understanding. And a smart husband goes along with his wife. Okay? Chazal, yeah, pray. Now, but then we come to something else in this Gemara. Something that's revolutionary, what Chazal knew. Again, I have no choice. I'm quoting the Gemara. If the woman climaxes first, it's a boy. If the man climaxes first, it's a girl. And Chazal said this to encourage the man to be considerate of his wife. This takes us into the whole area of sexual relations, ona. Men, most men, they're wild animals. That's the way God made them. They're concerned only with themselves. A man wants to be a Ben Torah. A man has to marry. Don't be concerned with yourself. Be concerned with your wife. She has to appreciate the relationship. And this is another fact of life, the way God made the world. A man, by definition, he's satisfied. He climaxed. Orgasm, whatever word you want to use. I didn't know these words till I was about 40, 50 years old. Take my word for it. We grew up in an innocent world. You do what's natural. And boy, it worked out beautifully, fabulously. For a woman, sex can be detrimental, a put-off. There are women that their whole attitude is, all right, my husband couldn't care less. That's not a Jewish attitude. It's not a Torah attitude. That's the chi of ona, ayin vav nun hei. And Chazal was so insightful. She climaxes first, it's a boy. He, a girl. So now, what do you see? What do you see from this Gemara? It's not so simple. You see the second half of the tshuva. I have to give Reb Menashe Klein credit. He doesn't block anything out. Wow. He's right in the ballpark. All right, I know his personal life. I know what he's gone through. I can appreciate his understanding. We'll come to this in it. We'll come to this, I don't know, this year, next year. Bezrat Hashem, I have what to say. I've had a very interesting life because I've had so many students. And because I've had so many students, I've lived many different lives that the average person doesn't experience. With Reb Menashe Klein, what I've experienced, it's one of a kind. One of a kind. If I tell you the whole story, you won't believe it, but every syllable is true. But we'll get there. We'll get there in due course. But coming back here, this is the Shaila. Do we do a sonogram? Wait a minute. But wait a minute. How can you say that? People daven for a certain sex. It's an open Gemara. Can they daven? Can't they daven? Is it a tefillat shav or isn't it? How can you determine the sex? Wait a minute. Chazal taught us sexual tricks. How to do it. How to learn. How to do it properly. How to achieve the woman being satisfied, happy. That's a boy. That's a girl. What's wrong with a sonograph? If we know what Chazal knew, and here they're very sharp. Dina, it's either boy or girl. Depends on the sexual act, how it was achieved, how it was done. And what do they say? No. Hachi b'maya skinan kigon shechizriya shnehem b'vat achat. That's a sexual achievement. That's an experienced man. An experienced woman. So what does it have to do with praying? Either it is a boy or it is a girl. What's going on? All right, here there was a doubt. That's why she prayed. All right, my dear students, I lead you at the start of the tshuva. It's a very fascinating tshuva, a lot of insight to life. And I'll tell you a story next week that breaks my heart to tell the story, but these eyes, these ears, this heart, I saw it up close. But halacha l'maisa, we're going to do a lot more. Wow, this opens up a whole philosophical thrust. Agadah, Medrash. It's a fabulous session. It's a tshuva, one page. But there's so much in it to elaborate on this tshuva. If I wanted, I could take a full year. Mamash, a full year. But let's reiterate. What did we do today? First of all, we recalled the memory of Sender Schlisgau. It's my whole world is slipping away, but that's life and I have to accept it. Kahelet. Sender Schlisgau. One of the boys, filled with enthusiasm, dedication, learning, reverence for the Rav, and his whole life spent in the world of Mizrahi, in America and here. He's been here many years, but I know for many decades he headed up the Mizrahi in Canada. I think Rabbi Gopin took his place when he went in Aliyah. It can be checked out, but that's what I believe. So Professor Yitzchak Tversky, Tolna Rebbe, opened up to us the Rambam. It's more than a sefer of halacha. Right there, and you can look, almost every series of halacha, when it ends, there's philosophy, there's musa, there's hashkafa. I challenge you, Yomo, to be of service to your people and collect all the philosophy in the Mishnah Torah and put it out in a volume, Hashkafat HaMishnah Torah, Philosophia Shel HaRambam. Okay, when it comes to mikvah, it's very appropriate for now, and it's so important that we don't understand it. Why does 40 se'el water metaher the person? Didn't the Reform say we have showers in our homes today? The shower remains a shower, but a mikveh is tahara. And alacha kama v'kama, yemei elul, before Rosh Hashanah, to come back, the lev nefesh. Sometimes it's one word, one thought that you hear, and it just turns you around 180 degrees. And once you make that commitment, the Tara comes in. And this is the myth, and this is what I quote the Rav. I've always quoted it. The Rav raised the issue. Why is Talmud Torah connected Kulam? Why is it so important? We forget what we learn. We forget what we learn, the Rav said. It's like a mikveh. You come out of the mikveh, you dry yourself. But the Tahara remains. Torah is filled, Chazal and the Navi compares it to Torah, Mitzamei. Torah, it leaves you like a mikveh. You may forget, but the process of learning, the purity of genders, remains. And those are the beautiful words of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he hits the nail on the head, and he convinces an old Litvak like yours truly, don't look at the Jew. He knows nothing. He does nothing. Don't maledict him. Tinok shenishpa. Let him have a mitzvah once in his life. Tfilin, dalet minim, shofar. Who knows what it can lead to if he starts to ask, who am I? Why am I here? What is the blood in my veins? Where do I come from? Where am I going? Who are my people? And that's what the Rav says so beautifully. When Chabad have someone put on tefillin, they want him to question. Read my words, translating the Rav from Hebrew to English. It's very powerful. Then we move forward into the whole question of a new invention. Ultrasound. I said sonograph. Why didn't you correct me? I made up a new word. Ultrasound balaz. Ultrasound balaz. What is an ultrasound? Do we need it? Why do we need it? Should we do it? Is it a defeat or negation of tamim tiyem Hashem Elokecha? Believe me, Yomo will tell you, no ultrasound. Period. Because of Moshe. And modern medicine will tell you, absolutely do an ultrasound. All right, we'll pick up the tshuva, and it's a very fascinating tshuva that the sources he cites lend themselves to endless analysis in the contemporary world. Are there any questions from the wonderful Talmidim sitting in front of me? No questions? Yomo, beat it up here and open it up to the world. Well, 1 second, they can talk. If they can talk, it means you don't have to open it.
I can.
Yeah.
I can. Ruby?
Yeah, go ahead.
Rav Shizgal, my high school years was the Rav in Holy.
Ah. Now you're turning them off. You turn them off. Wait, we can't hear you. 1 second, Mark. Right. How could Mark speak? Because
he was co-host.
Co-host. Okay. Is everyone turned off now?
No, everyone's turned on now.
Turned on. Mark? Mark, again, we couldn't hear you. You turned off. Rav Shishka was the rabbi in Holyoke.
Right. He was my first rabbi in Gemara. We learned Gemara together in preparation for my coming to YU.
Wow. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that addendum. Do you know when he came in Aliyah?
Let me see. I have to look it up. First he came, he went from Holyoke to Montreal for Mizrahi, and then he made Aliyah from there. I'm not sure what year.
I would imagine it was about 20 years in Montreal, but I may be wrong. Yitzchak, do you remember Sender Shishkal? He was part of our Chabura. Okay. I know someone told me he wasn't feeling well, and the funeral was Friday, as far as I gather. All right. God should give strength. We should. I mean, Dafkein Vaita, the Lebedik of Dafkein Vaita. We have to continue doing only good things, Be'ez Rat Hashem.
He worked in the publishing house of Merkaz
Harav. Interesting. Interesting. Is that Mossad Rav Kook or Merkaz Harav?
Yeah, Mossad Rav Kook.
Mossad Rav Kook. Interesting. I know his whole life he was affiliated with
the Mishnah. He was a very able person.
Right. That's what I said an hour and a half ago. An elechem mensch. I remember his smart. There was a certain sneer about him. He wasn't a loudmouth. I had very good chaverim. I had very good rebbeim and very good chaverim. And I should have amounted to a lot more, but I am what I am, and I'm Modela Kaddish Baruch.
And Coleman Rowe, I think he became a dentist, that he was at Fort Sam Houston for a year.
Where? In Houston?
In Texas, in Fort Sam Houston.
And how did you know him?
I was a chaplain at that post.
And did he have connection to Yiddishkeit?
Not much,
yeah. Generally speaking, the kids who went to Solanta, who didn't continue in MTA, very little was left. Because, see, they were sent to Solanta, their homes were not from. But they were frightened about the public school, so they sent them to Solanta. And, all right, some rebounded. I met them later in life. They were totally from Jews. Yesh meyayim, Baruch Hashem. All right, halavai, his grandchildren, great-grandchildren should come back. Yes.
Rebbe?
Yes.
Rebbe?
Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
I saw two things. I believe the book you referred to by Rav Manus Friedman is Doesn't Anyone Blush Anymore?
Right, correct. That's the name of the title.
Okay, and the other thing, as far as the Reformed temple that built the Mikveh, are you referring to something recent in Colorado?
Yeah, it's recent in Colorado. It was engendered
by... So there is a precedent, because I remember speaking with Rav Ilan Goldberg years ago when he was working on a Sefer on Mikveh. As a matter of fact, I think he taught at Bechala at some point also.
No, he lived in Israel. He had a, he went back when his father died. He he had to take over as editor, and he went back, and he's remained there ever since. It's a family newspaper.
Right, well, I spoke with him this summer, a few weeks ago in Denver, when I was passing through. I saw him in Shul. He gave me a contact years ago in Santa Fe when I was visiting. There was an Orthodox minyan in Santa Fe in a Reformed temple that the community had already fallen apart by then, but they had built a mikveh in someone's home. So there was a precedent for that. The Rav of that community years ago was Rav Shlomo Goldberg. I don't know if he's related. He later went to L.A., to Venice, and I think Or Eliyahu. But Rav Yehuda Goldberg was involved in establishing that Santa Fe community that had the mikveh from the Reformed temple in someone's house, from the Orthodox minyan in the Reformed temple.
Could be that shit.
So there's some kind of a precedent there.
Right. No, that it got a lot of publicity. A Reformed temple with a mikveh. That may very well be it. I don't believe Hillel Goldberg. I don't believe there were Rabbanim in his family. I may be wrong. If I understand correctly, his parents weren't entirely from. They were Jewish people with a lot of Jewish feeling. But he became a Torah Jew, a big Talmud Chacham, and later did a doctorate on the Musa movement. And he was inspired by the same Mashkiach who inspired me, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. We found that out once when we spoke in Israel. I think it was the 100th Yard site. It had to be 1982, the 100th Yard site of Yisrael Salanta. And right here in this building, it was sponsored by BMT, if I'm correct. And Whitey Horowitz, Moshe Horowitz. And we both spoke about Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, and we embraced. We didn't know that both of us were inspired by the same individual. His book on Musa was later published. It was a very, very fine volume. Hillel Goldberg is very capable. He did biographies that he did later, his collected writings. His piece on Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, I often quoted it when I spoke about Rabbi Kuttner, was very wonderfully insightful on Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner. Tell me, how is he feeling? You saw him?
I spoke with him in Edo, so I was down in there one moment.
And he's okay? He looks okay? Because they tell me he has...
He should be okay. I mean, okay. We just spoke very good.
Well, if he's walking on his feet... He's walking upright on his 2 feet. That's the best sign. Okay. Because I heard he had some surgery recently. Anyway, if anyone's listening and also will send my very, very best regards, Ektiva v'chatima tova, and health and strength, Yisrat Hashem. Okay, are there any more questions?
Rebbe?
Yeah?
Rebbe, just one thing. I remember Jonathan Sarnow once told the story that when he was starting out, a professor said to him, what are you going into? He said, American Jewish history. And the professor said, American Jews moved to America, intermarried, and disappeared. That couldn't have been Agus, right? Because he didn't go to Y.U. Sarnow. So you think he read it to Agus at some point?
I don't know. It could be, that could only be Agus or a Talmud of Agus. That's exactly what he said and by the way, I was one of his finest Talmidim. I don't think he was, you know, out to deny me the $50, but he wanted to make a statement. You're a bunch of idiots for thinking that there's a Jewish history in the United States. But tell me, did he go to Dropsy? I just taught at Dropsy too.
He went to Brandeis and Yale, I think. And maybe also to what's it called in Boston, Hebrew College, I think he went.
Hebrew College.
But I didn't get his doctorate from Yale, so I don't know.
Okay, but it's Shnei Nevi'im mitnabim b'Sigmon Echad. That's what it amounts to. Okay. I liked your comment. I liked your comment on Meir Kahaner on the Monday class, that Meir was very happy that the Christian, that all the churches who hated Jews, killed Jews, we went through the Crusades, and Meir is happy that now we have to protect them. And by the way, he's very right. We have to protect them. Tate Masra, that believe me, if the Arabs had a free hand, what they would do to the Christians, Hashem Yirachem, what we saw in
Sakhalin. It's also what the Rav said, that they said all those years that the Jews aren't in Israel, so it's proof that
that's right. Right, that's the Sheis Tavi Karta, absolutely right. All right, listen. All right, tomorrow is a very important class. We pick up where we left off. Ala Gula, Ala Tmura. We're not going to finish it tomorrow, but you're going to see. And I approach the Satmurov and Ala Gula, Tmura, Tura. I approach him as objectively as I can. And believe me, it takes ability to be objective, but you'll see. The refutation will come a drop after Ala Gula tomorrow, but the real refutation will come when I finish everything on Satma, and I stand on my overture that I challenge anyone to refute my refutation. Okay, we'll put it that way. But Ot Chazon LaMoed, but we have to understand the Satma Rav. And it's unbelievable what he published right after the Six-Day War. And you'll see how many counter-reactions there were to him. But let's go Shlav Shlav B'ezrat Hashem. I want to thank everyone, first of all, for those in the United States staying up. Well, I guess tonight wasn't that hard. You had Slichus. So you went from Slichus to Rav Menashe Klein. And until we meet again tomorrow morning, B'ezrat Hashem, only in health and happiness, das vidanya.